Chernobyl Day, Chernobyl anniversary, a chilling reminder of the fruits of nuclear power. The 20th anniversary of Chernobyl disaster reminds us that nuclear energy makes no sense environmentally and is very dubious economically. In Australia, the push is on for more uranium mines, a new nuclear reactor and radioactive waste dumps. Despite enormous community opposition to the nuclear industry in Australia, Europe and the US, weapons stockpiles continue to grow, nuclear waste dumps are overflowing, mines are still scarring the landscape and casualties of radioactivity are on the rise. The 20th anniversary of the world's worst nuclear power disaster at Chernobyl provides a stark reminder of the dangers of nuclear power. The Australian Conservation Foundation said today that in the current rush to export more uranium, Australia seems to have forgotten what a dangerous mineral we are pushing. I spoke with Scott today from FANG, which is the Fremantle Anti-Nuclear Group, about an action that they did this morning in Perth. Here he is now. On the phone with me now, I have Scott from the Fremantle Anti-Nuclear Group, otherwise known as FANG. How are you going, Scott?
Great. Very well, Alan.
Cool. And I believe you guys got up to a bit of an action today in commemoration of or in remembrance of Chernobyl Day.
Yeah, we did. Today is 20 years to the day since the disaster at the Chernobyl nuclear power station, and we thought it was pretty appropriate to take our remembrance of that event into the streets of Perth. Yeah. So that's what we were doing at around lunchtime today.
So what were you doing?
We had about 25 of us in white radiation suits with crosses, and each of the crosses bears the name of a significant nuclear accident that's occurred at a civilian or a military plant in the last 50 years or so. And the reason we're doing that is just to make people aware that Chernobyl, which many people have heard of, is really just the tip of the iceberg of a pretty dangerous industry, and we need to think really carefully whether we want to get any further into it than we already are.
Indeed, it's well documented, up to I think 93,000 deaths can directly attributable to the accident itself.
Well, it's really difficult to say because there's never been a disaster on this scale. So if you ask the nuclear industry in Australia, the Uranium Information Centre based in Melbourne says 57 deaths, nothing to worry about, it's all fine, nothing to do with us. And that's, you know, I find that extremely sad that they can do that and leave that sort of figure up there on their website. At the other end of the scale, you've got the Russian Academy of Science in a report that was released a little bit earlier this year saying roughly 200,000 dead from cancer, and, you know, unknown numbers of people still to be affected. And I think maybe we concentrate too much on the death toll because no one's really ever going to know. The sort of radiochemicals that come out of an accident at a nuclear power station aren't just causing cancer, they're causing heart diseases, lung diseases, birth defects, miscarriages, and these sort of things really slip under the statistical radar. So it's difficult to say how many people this thing has killed. All that we know for certain is that 9 million people have been affected in some way in the countries surrounding where the accident occurred. Some of them, the film that we saw the other night called Chernobyl Heart shows just how devastating some of these injuries are that are given to people. And they're being passed on through mutations and damage in DNA to children. And it's just incredibly sad to see the wards of these children who are never going to get a decent chance in life for an accident that happened 20 years ago at one single power station.
Let alone the environmental devastation of the surrounding area.
Yeah, well, that's been very difficult to track. The forest area just outside the reactor called the Red Forest, where the heaviest fallout occurred, the trees there are stunted. There's a lot of very strange things going on in that forest. And in the rest of the evacuated zone, you know, there's a lot of wildlife has moved in because it's been completely evacuated and it's quite undisturbed by industry and people. But the way this sort of material moves through the food chains, the number of different chemicals involved and the different organs that these different elements tend to attack, it's really difficult to say what the long-term effect is going to be. But the food, you know, food sources and people growing veggies and stuff in the areas around the reactor for hundreds of kilometres in all directions, the food's not safe to eat. There was a piece in the paper a couple of weeks ago about farms in Wales, as far away as Wales, 20 years after the disaster, that still need to have livestock scanned for radiation before they're safe to take to market, and on many occasions they're not, and these farmers are compensated.
Wow.
That's now, is that really an industry that we want to be getting into any further?
Yeah, I know that also that it's like you said it before, it's the tip of the iceberg, and although a big, very big iceberg and a big tip. But yeah, there's hundreds of documented cases in Australia itself, isn't there, of nuclear spills at the mines and at our very own reactor.
Yeah, the some of the stuff at Lucas Heights and the reactor in Sydney are pretty scary because that thing's very old. Nobody's really certain what they do in there, but there have been some pretty high-profile spills in there. Probably the worst one in recent times was the accident that happened in Ranger, I think in 2003, at the uranium mine in Kakadu, where they fitted a process water hose to the drinking water and showering water in the mine camp. And so you've got these work crews showering in water laced with 400 times the safe, so-called safe dose of uranium, and drinking the stuff. And this is at what is supposedly the best regulated uranium mine in the world. So heaven help us if Howard gets his way and we have 20 or 30 of these things springing up all over the country.
Yeah, it seems to be a push by the nuclear industry to really, I mean, they're talking a lot lately about the idea of nuclear energy as a solution to climate change, which is completely erroneous as far as my research goes.
Well, the nuclear industry has grabbed onto the climate change argument like a drowning man grabbing a log. They really see it as their last chance of survival as an industry, and on that I think we agree. I think it's true. It's the biggest con job, environmental con job in history. They've managed to persuade fairly self-interested policymakers in Australia, at least, that, you know, with a thin coat of greenwash, nuclear power can be reborn as clean and green. And, you know, they've got the power of the Murdoch press behind them, and, you know, if anybody saw the West Australian newspaper today, you'll see what it is that we're up against. But unfortunately for these people, it's not true. The technology is their worst enemy. The greenhouse emissions from nuclear power are actually enormous. And if you look at what happens with declining grades of uranium ore, they're going to have to shift and mine and process and treat and dump 10,000 tons of rock for every ton of yellowcake that actually comes out of the mine when you get down to these very low ore grades. Now, that takes a lot of diesel. If you've seen the kind of trucks they drive around in at mine sites, it's extremely greenhouse intensive. So every step of the nuclear fuel chain is embedded in the fossil fuel economy. So it's complete garbage to say that nuclear energy's got anything to add to climate change, because nukes need climate change a lot more than climate change needs nukes.
Let alone the devastating waste that's accrued from that kind of energy.
Well, it blows my mind that we're still having to campaign on this. I mean, how bad does it need to get? There's 30 years worth of uranium mill tailings piled up around sites in Australia. I've had catastrophic spills at Rum Jungle in the Northern Territory, where you've now got radioactive tailings washing down the river, the East Finnis River. And the largest radioactive tailings dump on Earth taking shape at Roxby Downs in South Australia.
Wow.
And they're currently considering a fourfold expansion at Roxby. And they've got enough ore there to go for another 80 or 90 years. It's a monster. But nobody can tell us what happens to tens of millions of tons of radioactive sand once they've finished mining the stuff. There doesn't appear to be a plan in place. And I think that's pretty irresponsible.
Yeah, let alone all the rest of the world's waste that when you accumulate it all, it's in the millions of tons, isn't it?
Well, the stuff that we're used to dealing with in Australia is the mine tailings. Very high volumes, not very radioactive, but very, very high volumes of radioactive waste. And in the rest of the world, with active weapons programs or civilian power programs, they're dealing with high-level radioactive waste, which is completely different order. So it's very small quantities in terms of tons, 300 or 400 tons a year for a large reactor, of the most intensely hot, acidic, radioactive, and chemically toxic waste known to humankind. And no one has the foggiest idea what to do with this stuff.
Nice.
So they're just warehousing it out the back of nuclear power stations and arguing over whose backyard it's going to get dumped in. And so far in Australia, we've held off and defeated the Pangaea proposal.
Yep.
But those people are still around. One of the Pangaea principals will be back in Sydney later this year spruiking international waste dumps again. I think that's one of the reasons why Alan Carpenter and the Labor government in WA have been so strong on opposing uranium mining. because it opens this Pandora's box, and we know that there's a lot of land on, you know, Aboriginal land out back, out east of Laverton and around sort of the Pilbara, around Kintyre and so forth, which are supposedly geologically good areas for dumping this stuff. So I don't think we've heard the last of these sort of proposals, unfortunately.
Yeah, once spoke with Robin Chappell about the idea of nuclear waste and how to get rid of it, and put the question to him, albeit with a tongue-in-cheek, we should perhaps shoot all of the uranium off in rockets, all of the nuclear waste off in rockets out into the sun.
You'd be surprised how often that gets proposed.
Yes,
why
it's a classic.
Why don't we just fire the stuff into space? And I don't know, if you want to just have a look at
the maths.
Footage of the Challenger disintegrating in 1986 and imagine, or you know, tens of tons, I suppose, of nuclear waste being scattered into the sky, how many flights you would need, how much fossil fuel it's going to cost to get the stuff into space. It's very heavy, there's a lot of it, it's really dangerous material. I think it's a bit of a pipe dream. I think we've got to deal with this stuff in here and now on planet Earth. Unfortunately, it's a legacy that we've created.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Scott, for your time.
Thanks, Al, for having me on the show.
No worries. And that was Scott from FANG, the Fremantle Anti-Nuclear Group. And, yeah, they performed an action in town today for Chernobyl Day. You can find out more about the Chernobyl disaster on Perth Indie Media. There's a few articles on there about the legacy of that particular, the world's biggest ever nuclear disaster.